Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Rogue Startups. This is episode 192. Today, Dave and I are going to talk through, we have two kind of particular things we want to talk through. One is kind of masterminds and peer feedback. And the other is a tweet storm by Brianna, who has just left Stripe and had some really kind of salient things to say about kind of the business that they've built there and the culture. And I think all of us really look up to Stripe as like the kind of business we want to build in terms of culture and just how good they are at everything. And I think she shed some light on why that is. So, Dave, how's it going, man?
It's going good. It's going good. And yeah, we were just chatting a little bit beforehand about last week's episode, which I presume that most of you in the audience will be listening to already shortly this week while we're recording this one. And I hope everybody enjoys it because it was a fun episode to record. We were just recounting that.
Yeah, I think it's particularly fun when we have a lot of stuff to talk about. And I think that's like the risk maybe that we have of like having a podcast that goes out every week is some weeks there's nothing to talk about, right? I mean, I can be working a lot, but there's nothing I can or want to talk about on the podcast. But I think in recent weeks, we've had kind of a lot of stuff that we want to talk about and we can talk about and share kind of what we're learning along the way. And that's really cool. Yeah.
So what's our subject for this week?
Yeah. So I think this week that, you know, one of the things that I think both of us are really conscious of is that we're, you know, kind of physically and metaphorically, I don't know what the right word is, like physically and yeah, and metaphorically kind of alone, right? In this like bootstrapping world. And sometimes it gets tough and it gets lonely and we have self-doubt and things like that. And things like mastermind groups or any kind of like peer feedback mechanism is something that really helps us a lot. And I know we were in a group together a year ago or so. And we've both been through several different iterations of mastermind groups in the past. And I think just talking about maybe now, like in a little bit of hindsight, kind of what was good about some of those and what was bad and what we like about groups we're in or that we want to be in. I think that would be helpful for folks maybe that are just starting out or haven't been in really organized, effective groups so that they know like what to look for.
Or if you're in a group and you're not really sure, is this working for me? Is this not working for me? Like, how do you kind of figure it out? Like, what is it that you do need? And it's tough to ask those questions, I found, until I've gotten to a point where it's like, well, shit, this isn't working for me. And then all of a sudden I realized what question I should have asked six months earlier. So hopefully we can talk a little bit about that today.
Yeah, I've totally been in groups that, this sounds really arrogant, I felt like were a waste of my time. And it's not because I was so much smarter than all the people in there, but that we didn't have the communication style that lended itself to really open dialogue and constructive feedback, which I think is kind of the cornerstone of all this kind of stuff. And those are the groups that I get the most out of, is where there's positive feedback that's encouraged by all people and is not threatening.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. And I have also been in groups where I felt like there was not an exchange of equals.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll put it that way. Where, you know, either certain people in the group are farther ahead or certain people in the group are way behind. And neither is wrong with either of those. But if you're going to be in a group, I found that having you like a step ahead or a step behind where you're at means that you're going to get the most benefit out of what's going on with that. One of the mastermind groups that I joined very, very briefly, I looked at the people that were there and we had our, you know, intro call. And it was obvious that one of them was so far ahead of where I was at that he was thinking about things that I was not even ready to start tackling yet. And then there was also somebody in that same group who was really far behind. They were just getting started. They didn't have a lot of MRR, and I was kind of in between. And I, you know, just wasn't feeling the group. It wasn't getting a good vibe out of it. So I didn't even like stay that long. And, you know, maybe I wasn't giving it its fair shake, but I think I still feel like that was the right call, because not having everybody at a close enough level means that it's hard for you to contribute and it's hard for you to benefit from whatever is coming out of that group as well.
Yeah. I think like you hear folks like Jason Cohen talk about business and I'm just confused. Most of the time I hear him talk about business, I'm like, man, you are light years ahead of where I am. And you're thinking about stuff that doesn't even occur to me. And so I think like that's an extreme example, but I think it's a point of kind of what you're talking about is that like folks that are that far ahead of where you are practically and tactically, you just can't relate to. And so that I think that's probably where like you feel like it's not worth your time. Because even if you were in a mastermind with Jason Cohen, he would say stuff to you and you're like, sorry, man, but that like, I just can't relate to that.
Yeah, and that definitely is going to make for a shitty mastermind for sure. And right now, you and I started having this conversation on Slack, but yeah, like how many masterminds are you part of right now?
I'm a part of two regular mastermind groups. One is every other week. The other is weekly. And then plus Tiny Seed, which is a weekly kind of every other week cohort call with all 10 companies.
Dude, that's
a lot of feedback.
How do you keep up with all that? That's a lot of feedback. How do you incorporate and filter that?
Yeah, so, you know, it's a little bit, I'll take a step back. And like part of it, like the cohort updates are most of the time just like 5 minutes. Like this is kind of where I am. This is what I'm working on. This is what I'm struggling with. Kind of like a stand up. So that's not like too probing. We do have like hot seat type things where we dive deep into an issue. And that's cool. And that's more like a mastermind session. One of the groups is with two other kind of really established SaaS founders here in Europe. And really, we just kind of chat. It's not like a really structured mastermind group. I've been part of mastermind groups through the Dynamite Circle that I'm part of. Those folks get really serious about your mastermind group. Like there has to be an agenda and you have to update this Google Doc before the meeting or you can't call in. And all this kind of stuff. And like the one I'm in with the two folks here, it's basically like every other week we get on and kind of talk about what we're doing and, you know, get advice from each other or, you know, ask questions or whatever. So it's pretty relaxed. And the one in the middle maybe is the two other founders from Tiny Seed that I'm in a call with every week. It is pretty organized. Like we always have goals that we set at the end of the meetings. And then we touch base on those goals, like, hey, did you do this thing you said you were going to do? And how's that going? But there, because we're all like in this really similar situation together, we talk a lot about emotional stuff, you know, like, hey, I'm not growing, you know, our business is not growing as fast as I want it to. And like how that makes me feel. And that's legit. Like that's real life kind of stuff that we all need to grapple with. Or like, you know, I'm not getting customers, kind of getting traction with my app like I want. And what does that mean? And I don't even know how to think about that. And so we help each other kind of in that respect. So each of them are a little different, which is good. I think if they're all exactly the same, I wouldn't need to be in all of them, but I appreciate all of them for different reasons.
So is there one that you think you're getting more valuable stuff out of than others, or does it vary and how does it vary?
Yeah, it's different because we talk about different stuff in all of them. Well, for starters, the two in Tiny Seed are just about Castos. And I have like a decent amount of stuff to talk about with Podcast Motor on like pretty high level, you know, like business, the direction the business is going in and stuff. So the group with the other two founders in Europe here, it is nice to be able to kind of vent and get feedback about that stuff. But I think that like you were talking about, Dave, like the one where it's just the other two Tiny Seed founders and I, we're all, you know, second time founders at maybe slightly different stages in our journey. The three of us are all at kind of different stages, but we all know what we're talking about and we all have a lot of good, insightful feedback and opinions on things. And so I think that's the one where we exchange ideas and thoughts the most freely. And I think that's a tough thing because like part of it's cultural and part of it's just communication style and like personalities, but there's no like, I shouldn't say this to this person or they shouldn't have said that to me and I feel bad now because they're judging me. Like there's none of that. So that's kind of a rare thing, I think, and not something you can kind of fabricate or conjure up and you can kind of hope that happens. But I think we were pretty intentional about it. Like we picked this group, one of the people I've known for a long time, the other person we kind of wanted to bring in after a few weeks of being in the cohort together because he seemed like a really sensible guy. But I think that it's kind of like picking a co-founder. You know, like you can't just do it. It's got to like, there probably should be a process to it, but a lot of it is a little bit of luck and kind of who you know and being intentional about the psychological process of it, I guess.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I'm actually on the other extreme of this right now. I'm trying to think the last time I was in a formal mastermind. It's been a while. It's been at least 9 months. It hasn't been in the calendar year of 2019 at all. And I'm trying to think how far back into 2018 I had one, because there was a brief time that I did resurrect an old one that I had, and we brought in some new members and we tried it out, but it didn't really stick. I think it was like late last year. I think we had maybe two or three meetings, and I just wasn't getting what I wanted out of it. And it didn't seem like anybody else was either, because it just sort of fell apart of its own accord. What I want to get out of a mastermind now has changed quite a bit over the years. And it's interesting because I had a conversation with Brian Castle about this at Big Snow in February this year. And Brian and I were in a mastermind at one point. And, you know, the mastermind didn't last very long. And Brian eventually said, I want to leave. And, you know, me being the guy that takes everything personally and thinks that it's all about him because I'm, you know, a selfish, narcissistic idiot sometimes. I asked Brian, I said, hey man, you know, why'd you leave the mastermind? I thought it was actually doing pretty good. You know, did I screw up? Did I piss you off somehow? And Brian laughed and was like, no. I just didn't, I don't like having the constraint of a weekly or biweekly meeting at a specific time, because that's not when my problems happen. Mm-hmm. That's not when I need advice. And I thought about that and I was like, oh, that's interesting. I hadn't really thought about it that way. And the more that I've thought about it over time, the more I realized, as a slightly more experienced founder, I guess, I don't want to say an expert founder because I'm sure as fuck not that. As a more experienced founder, I find that my questions are less about operational and execution and how-to kind of stuff, as opposed to, I've got this very specific situation. How the hell do I get out of it? And I find myself running into less of those than I used to. Like when I first started out and had masterminds and was having a regular every other week kind of thing, we were always operating on, okay, here's what I'm going to get done the next time. And then that time you might be on the hot seat and then you'd bring up a question. And for me, it was always like, I'm bringing stuff to this group of people to try to get myself unstuck. And then after a couple of years of that, I realized I was getting myself unstuck a little more easily without the help of that group. And so that piece of it was less valuable to me, but I still kept coming back and doing that. And it ended up being kind of, I don't know, habituated, I guess, to where I was just doing it again and again and again, but I wasn't getting as much value out of it as I used to. And then finally, when the group just sort of reached its natural climax and we split up, after that, you know, I tried to start another group with some other people, and then I ended up having two different groups, and one of them was the more conversational one like you talked about, and one of them was a little more of the formal, all right, here's what I'm going to accomplish next week, here's where I'm stuck, here's what I want to talk about in the hot seat, that kind of stuff. And, you know, the conversational one was fine, but that usually just ended up turning into, you know, three people hanging out, talking about, well, here's what I'm doing in my business right now. But it was less about, you know, here's where I'm stuck. Occasionally, probably maybe one in every three or four meetings, I'd bring up something and be like, hey guys, I'm having this thing here. Do you have any thoughts on this? The other one, I was still, you know, falling into the old habits, but I wasn't feeling it as much anymore. And so Brian's comment when he made it finally resonated with me in February. And I'm like, huh, do I really need a mastermind right now? Like, do I need to have that constant contact for everything? And I stopped to think about it, and I was looking at the list of things that I wanted to do for Recapture and the plans for the year and so on and so forth. And I was like, a lot of this is just execution, and I kind of know where it needs to go, and we just kind of need the time to get there. And then as things have come up, or I've had wins, or I've had situations that are crises, what I've done is I've turned around and brought it back to the Big Snow Slack group, where everybody from the, for those that don't know, everybody that's in the conference, we all have a Slack channel. And in that Slack group, we talk about whatever. And, you know, it's active at various times and quiet a lot. And then I assume that there's a lot of private conversations that go on, because occasionally I get a monthly report that says there were 113 conversations. And I'm like, I wasn't part of most of those. So I assume everybody's talking behind the scenes, which is great. That's what, I mean, that's what it's there for, right? And then I realized that That's what I need right now, is I just need a group of people that I can put something in front of and say, hey, this is what's going on. What do you think? Or here's what I see. What am I missing? You know, or have you guys run into this before? What would you do? But I don't need that every other week. And so as a result, I've not been in a mastermind for a long time. And, you know, part of me was like, oh, God, you know, I should be in a mastermind. I keep talking about masterminds, and masterminds are really great. But I haven't been in one. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
My name is Dave, and I'm not in a mastermind, and yeah. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I think that, you know, what are you going to do in the next week? And then did you do the thing you said you were going to do last week kind of thing is a lot more geared for folks who are less experienced, I think. Because, right, like all of us who are, you know, most time or full time in our businesses are plenty motivated to get shit done and move the needle. So I think that stuff is not as important for me in a mastermind now. But like you said, it's a lot of really high level stuff. And really, like, a fair amount of it is just like social contact with people that are doing what we're doing. Because, like, I don't get a lot of, like, in-person chatting about SaaS here in Annecy. You know, like, we're going to MicroConf Europe next week. I can't wait, because I'll get to talk SaaS with folks for, like, I'll be there for a week in total. And that'll, like, tide me over until whenever the next time I get to do it is. And like, in between those things, I get to talk with, you know, my friends here in Europe every other week. And that's awesome. Just social time, really. And about every time one person has a big thing they want to talk about. So it kind of works out like a hot seat, but it's pretty informal. You know, Dave, the one thing that, like, this is making me think is I've had coaches recently. One, very intentionally, I've been working with a coach for Podcast Motor, Alex from WP Curve. So the guy who built WP Curve with Dan Norris.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. So I've been working with him for a few months on just like operational, organizational kind of stuff with Podcast Motor, and it's made a big difference. And then as part of Tiny Seed, you know, I have access to both Rob and Einar pretty much whenever I need to. And they're both, you know, multi-time, very successful SaaS founders. And I find that for particular things, that's better than a mastermind group, because that's when I want the answer. You know, like if I were to come to you or to Brian Castle or to, you know, Derek Reimer or whoever that I consider kind of like a peer. Like, if I ask you the question and you give me your answer, I would say, yep, okay, that's cool, you know, good. But like, if someone who's kind of really, 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 really been there and done that gives me the answer to the question, then I say, okay, that's the answer. There's no more needing to worry about whether, you know, where they're coming from is right or whatever. So I think there's definitely a place for that. Yeah. And maybe something like for folks in general, and I don't know, Dave, if this is right for you or not, maybe, but like for folks in general, maybe having those like two or three people that you can get time with, even if it's through something like clarity.fm, to call Jason Cohen and ask him a question and pay $100 for it, you know, maybe really helpful for some of those really sticky things that, I mean, because I think part of it is like, you just need the answer sometimes. Like, I don't want to jump through all these hoops, right? I just want you to tell me what to do in this situation, to offload some of that like emotional stress. I don't know.
Yeah, I think there's some of that. And, you know, I've contemplated using Clarity several times where I thought I had a really well-formulated question. And then I sat down and I was like, all right, if I'm going to pay for this, I really need to think this through and make sure I understand what it is I'm asking, what's my goal of getting out of it. And in the end, I realized that in every case that I was going to use Clarity for somebody, I was going to call Chris Lamo one time, and even though I've got his personal email, I still was going to go through Clarity because I felt like that was the right thing to do. This was something that was totally unrelated. Was going to call a couple of other entrepreneurs that are pretty well known, but I didn't have personal connections to. And when I sat down and really thought about what it was I was trying to ask, I got a better sense of what the boundaries of that thing were. And once I understood it a little bit better, I didn't end up needing to make the call in the first place. So, I mean, there's still value in just sitting down and noodling that out. But I think your point about having a network is huge, because that's really what it is, right? You have a network of folks that you've established some relationships with, either informally or formally, through podcasts, through going to conferences, whatever. And those people now, because you have a relationship with them, they're kind of like your go-to folks on those particular things. And you can say, hey, what do you think about this? Or I know you might have some experience in this. I'm running into this problem here. Would you have 10 minutes to chat about that or something like that? And I found that those things work really well to sort of scratch my mastermind itch these days. But that's after 8 years of establishing that network, which didn't happen overnight. And certainly for the first 3 or 4 years, I didn't feel like I had that level of connection. You know, there were a few people I could go to, but I would lean on them a little too heavily. And so after a while, it was like, okay, I gotta expand this a little bit. But that's where I think it comes from. That's where I'm getting the value these days, is that, you know, you go out, you go to these conferences, you meet people, you make a relationship with them, you become personal friends or, you know, professional colleagues, or, you know, maybe you're just in the same niche and, you know, every time you see each other, you're like, hey, let's go, you know, have lunch or have a beer or whatever. And that's where you get some interesting stuff. In fact, one of those connections, I'll just do a little bit of promotion of our next show. We're going to have Adi Pinar, from formerly of Woo Themes, Public Beta, and Conversio, who just got acquired by Campaign Monitor.
Nice.
You knew that. Yeah. He's just publicly announcing it right today. But anyway, he's one of those guys that I had contact with. Like, I met him back in 2011 when he came to the very first MicroConf, and he spoke. He talked about Woo Themes. It was the very first time I'd ever heard Adi. And then I ran into him again, you know, a year ago or so at Shopify Unite, and we had had conversations at MicroConf a couple of times, and then we talked again at Shopify Unite. But, you know, Adi's in the same space. He's actually a competitor of mine. But he's a really nice guy. He's really smart. He's very open. He is, you know, he's gone through a lot. He's like founded 3 major companies, had 2 exits on that, struggled with a lot of stuff, also has a family. And, you know, when I had a specific question about that CEO interview the other day, I found out that he was connected to this guy. And so I said, hey, could you help me out here? Do you know this person? Can you tell me something about them? And that was a very specific ask. He gave me some great information on that. And that, you know, really helped me frame that discussion better and make me more prepared for it. So, but that's a perfect example of exactly that kind of a thing. You know, that's not really a mastermind thing, but it is a network thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what we're both getting at is that network and community and feedback and support is super important, and however you can or need to get it is kind of individual and probably depends on the stage you're at in your journey here. But I think very, very, very few of us do this or want to do it without some kind of community support.
Yeah, there's no way to not do this without some kind of community support. You were talking about the social aspect of it earlier. It's interesting. You know, you said, oh, I wanted to be able to talk to other people with SaaS. Well, I'd like to be able to talk to other people that aren't just the people I live with in this house, because I work from home. And I, you know, I'm just self-imposed exile, I guess. You know, I'm here a lot of the time. And as a result, that definitely limits my social opportunities. So, you know, we try every quarter to get the Big Snow Denver contingent together and go out and hang, which I'm delinquent. They're waiting on me to give an answer, and I suck. If you guys are listening to this, I'm very sorry. Yes, it's on me. And then, you know, just trying to find other times to go talk to people in general, like the conversational mastermind thing. That was always great to just sort of catch up with those guys. You know, wasn't necessarily I was getting hardcore strategies and tactics out of it, but I was, you know, having a touchstone with friends of mine that I would go hang out with in Vegas.
Yep.
So
in Minneapolis,
that was really nice. And soon to be Minneapolis. That's true.
I know it's going to snow.
Oh my God. Speaking of snow this week, we're having this crazy weather event in Denver. It was on CNN. Uh-uh. Have you heard this? So we are going to swing about 60 degrees from high to low in 36 hours.
Windows cracking everywhere.
No. No. This is the last time this happened about 3 years ago. It killed a fuck ton of plants. And, you know, people's trees and bushes ate it. And, oh, it was bad. It was bad for like the next 2 years. And only this last year did things finally start recovering. I had some stuff die in my front yard. But here it comes. Here it comes again. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. So I think the other thing we wanted to talk through is this tweet storm from Brianna Wolfson of formerly of Stripe now, I guess, and kind of had this tweet storm of seven different things that she kind of learned at Stripe. And I mean, the tweet storm is, I don't know, she's like 30 different tweets long, but thought, we'll definitely link to it,
long.
but thought we could touch on a couple of things that she talks about that makes Stripe different. Cause I think, like I mentioned in the opening, like it's a business and an environment that so many of us who have had like firsthand experience with them just are envious of. I mean, everything they do is classy. Everything they do is beautiful and works and is fair. And I think she talks about like kind of why that is even at the scale they are now.
Yeah. And the one that resonated the most with me, and this is the one I want to start with here, is she talks about the concept of turpentine at Stripe. And I was thinking to myself, good God, they don't paint. What the hell are you talking about? They're not striping the highway. Apparently, Picasso had this quote, said, when art critics get together, they talk about form and structure and meaning, you know, all this deep pseudo-intellectual bullshit. But when artists get together, they talk about where you can buy cheap turpentine. Stripe is obsessed with the turpentine. And the metaphor, if you're not getting it, if it's not clear, it's basically just an obsession of details. So the reason artists would be concerned about cheap turpentine is that, you know, they're using a crap ton of it. And for them to get the most value out of their work and to try to maximize their own, you know, personal runways of their patrons and stuff like that, they're trying to get the best materials that do the job for them and make it so that they don't have to spend the most money to get it. So that's why they want the cheap turpentine. But really what it's about is obsession with customer details and just understanding your customers so much better than everything else. Another example that she gave of the same thing had to do with Pixar. So when Pixar was filming Ratatouille, if you're not familiar, you don't have kids, Ratatouille is one of the Pixar movies where a rat ends up being a cook because he's obsessed with food and then has the chef that he gets to fake to cook the food for him who can't cook to save his life. And the rat, you know, is like doing him like a puppet the whole time, making him cook in the kitchen. And, you know, hilarity ensues when eventually they find out that the rat is cooking the food. But if you've seen this movie, and any Pixar movie, really, there's a definite beauty and an obsession with details that gives you an immediate experience that you're inside that kitchen. Like when they're in the kitchen and you see them doing the cooking, and I'm by no means a professional chef and know absolutely zero about what goes on in a restaurant kitchen. But when I was watching this movie and I was in there, you felt like you were in a real Paris kitchen. It didn't seem like they just bullshit their way through this. And the reason that the case is that there was a guy, Ed Catmull, that was basically going to kitchens. The entire crew of Ratatouille visited restaurant kitchens in Paris to get a feel for them. Not just one, and they weren't just there for 5 minutes. I mean, they like spent a crap ton of time doing this. And then that he got basically obsessive specificity of these kitchen scenes, the clogs on the tiles, how the chef held their arms while they're chomping, very, very specific stuff. And so this is what makes Stripe's product and their culture better, because they're very, very neck deep in the minds of users and they're in the problem space and so on and so forth. That's what makes Stripe really, really successful. And when I was looking back at other entrepreneurs in our space, the ones that have been really, really good, the ones that have had businesses that have taken off, are all the ones that obsess about their customers.
Yep.
You know, I could list out a bunch of them here, but we'll throw out three quick examples. One of them, obviously, Rob Walling with Drip. He understood email marketing because he had done email marketing for Hittail and found all of these things that were slowing him down and things that he could make his SaaS that much better. And so he built the system that he really wanted and then slowly evolved that over time. Another great example is Jordan Gall from Carthook. Used to run his own e-commerce store, had a bunch of shitty apps that he was working with on Volusion and some other platform that he worked with before that, or maybe after that, before he got to Shopify. But in all of that, like, he deeply understood why these things sucked and what was his main thing, like how he wanted to build it instead and what would make his life better and how he could make a crap ton of money doing it. He understands those details in a way that few people do, and that's why he was really successful at it. Like, Carthook is kicking ass and taking names right now because of that.
I mean, having been podcasting with you, Dave, for 4.5 years and running Podcast Motor and seeing a ton of podcasters come through, is I have a really unique set of experience with podcasting that we translate into the app and the marketing and the pricing and all of this stuff. And I think that's one of the reasons that we're, you know, that we've been successful so far. Because I think that people don't have that firsthand knowledge and really understand the details and the why behind the details, probably struggle more so than people that have been there and are scratching their own itch. I mean, this is kind of a tangent, but I totally agree that the details and understanding where people are coming from and obsessing over like solving that customer need is a huge asset in your and like step towards being successful.
And not to beat on this too much further, but one other point that I wanted to make, when I was trying to build Support Vine, the thing that really screwed me on that one was not really understanding what customer really needed the solution, because I was basically building something that I wanted without really understanding where the customer pain came from. And it seems to me like if I'm going to build anything in the future, that it has to be something that I have like deep personal knowledge of that niche and what is wrong with it. It can't just be, oh, you know, I'm going to go in and do this 10,000 foot forum surf where I can hear all the customers complaining about feature X, and then I'm going to go build something that has feature X and that's just going to fix it. Because I don't think that works. I mean, I think it will work a little, but I don't think that it gets to the heart of the problem where you're obsessing about their problems. It's more like, I'm just going to build a business around this feature. And that, I think, that's a recipe for failure, or at least mediocrity. Yep. You know, you might be able to limp along with that, but unless you really obsess, I don't think you can truly be amazing at that product, because those that will obsess about it are going to kick your ass.
I will only touch on the one other one here, and I think it is really important, because you see it from like Stripe and what Brianna is saying here, and you also see it from Amazon, and it's the importance of writing, and specifically at Amazon they call them narratives, where that's like a presentation that you make to your peers and your team and your superiors about a problem and how you want to solve it. And I think the big picture kind of message with this is like writing clarifies your thoughts, Dave, like you were talking about earlier with like potentially calling a coach, but when you sat down and wrote out the problem you were having and how you might solve it, you kind of solve the problem for yourself. Sitting down and writing something solidifies kind of your thinking and the problem statement that you have and the pluses and minuses of the situation you're in so much and so clearly that I think it just kind of solves the problem for itself, or at least that when you get this narrative or this problem statement to your team or to your superiors or whatever, the answer is really obvious to them. So I think that, you know, we do a lot of meetings, like Zoom meetings and like video calls and stuff like that, but we all write a lot, right, in Slack and in Notion and stuff like that. And I pretty much always find that when I write something out and then present the written form to the team, that it's better received, because I've had the time to think through it and go back and revise and clarify what I'm saying and what I'm meaning. And I just think that we all should probably take the time to asynchronously write stuff and then present it to the team, instead of just offhand saying, hey, can you hop on a Zoom call and we'll talk through this thing and I'll just kind of wing it, because I feel like you're always kind of missing something there.
Yeah, inevitably, whenever I've just been winging it, those are the times that my ideas come out the most half-baked and therefore that worst implemented. If I haven't really sat down and thought through, like, my best designs are when I'm actually sitting there thinking, okay, how are they going to use this? what happens if that doesn't work? What are they, where do they end up? And, you know, that kind of a use, you know, I'll just go back to a very old term that probably doesn't get bandied about anymore, but it's like, think through a bunch of use cases. Yeah. And if you're not thinking through like success use cases and failure use cases and all of that, you haven't really framed your thinking very well. And therefore, it's kind of hard to come up with something. You know, now we talk about user stories and Agile. But for me, it's still like, it's just a different flavor of use case.
Yep. Yeah. So I think, Dave, we'll leave the rest of this for folks to read and digest on their own. But it was a really interesting bit that Brianna wrote out. And always like really appreciate folks who are part of organizations like Stripe that we all really kind of look up to and respect, sharing kind of what they've learned and kind of what they're taking away from it. So encourage more of that for folks who are, you know, at some of these companies that we really look up to kind of share what they're learning, because we're sharing what we're learning here kind of in the trenches, and would love to hear more of it from some of the bigger companies.
And if you really enjoyed this episode, the one ask that we always make is for you to share it with somebody you think might benefit from it. And if you have a chance, of course, we'd love a review from you in iTunes. I don't think we've asked for that in a while, Craig, so I'll just go ahead and throw that in this time. And we hope you enjoyed the episode today. Until next week.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.